Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Harbin, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Harbin, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
~70% of GDP. I mean, that's incredible. By the way, Stephanie, I'm listening on the Comrex, and I'm getting a feedback of myself back into my ear with a delay. 70% of GDP. This is crazy. The national debt. That's the national debt of the United States. As a percentage of gross domestic product, this is the data from the White House website, whitehouse.gov, is now 70%. 70% of the total output of the United States is equal to our debt. Now, during the Carter administration, it was 35%. During the Clinton administration, it got up to a peak of 70 right after the end of Bush-Reagan. See, Bush, when Reagan came into office, it was around 33%. Reagan cranked it all the way up to 68%. It went up another couple of points during the first couple of years of Clinton's administration, as, you know, of course, that was the remnants of Reagan. Clinton dropped it by a full 10 points. And now Bush has got it exploding again. Last time we had our national debt as a percentage of gross domestic product this high was during World War II, when we were fighting a war, I mean a real war. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. So much going on in the world today. And, here now Barack Obama talking about tax cuts. Well, we'll see. We'll see. It's very interesting. I know yesterday I went off on it saying, you know, this is a bad idea. Tax. I continue to think that it's a bad idea to use tax cuts as a way to stimulate the economy, because history shows that tax cuts don't stimulate the economy. In fact, history shows that what tax cuts do is they add to debt and they slow down the economy. But that said, there are some very highly targeted tax cuts that possibly could have some help. Front page of today's Financial Times. Article about how Germany, which has been initially was criticized by the European Union because Germany is the largest of the economic engines within Europe, and they are sliding into recession. Nothing like the Great Depression that we're experiencing. We're looking at over 2 million jobs lost just in the last year now. This is the second Republican Great Depression in a century. Every time you have Republicans, as you had during the Coolidge and Hoover administrations, every time you have Republicans putting into place pure laissez-faire, unregulated capitalism, economic systems, you end up with bubbles, a few very, very rich people, a bursting bubble, and a lot of poverty for working people. And you have to bring in the Democrats to clean up the mess. It's like Democrats are the guys who walk behind the elephant, right, with the shovel. Clean up the mess. So anyhow, Germany is looking at fixing their recession because this thing is going worldwide. And front page of the Financial Times, Germany is close to announcing a second fiscal stimulus worth up to $68 billion U.S. It's 50 billion euros. And that's twice what they were talking about a week ago. They're getting at how serious this is, that as the U.S. slides into a full-blown Republican Great Depression, it's going to take the rest of the world with it, as it did last time we had a Republican Great Depression. And they're going to increase their investment in infrastructure, although Germany is very good at this to begin with. They have an excellent public transportation system. They have a full national health care system. They have very good infrastructure. But they're going to increase that. They're going to have job-supporting measures. They're going to lengthen Social Security. They're going to have possibly an increase in the minimum wage. But the thing that I thought was most interesting, This, by the way, is going to be 1.5% of gross domestic product for 2009. Is a 4% rise in the yearly income that is not subject to income tax. Now, in the United States, there's a lot of people, many of them working at Walmart, there's a lot of people who are earning so little that they don't pay income taxes. And Germany is saying, let's raise that amount. Now, it's interesting to note, in 1913, when the income tax was first introduced, only the wealthiest 1% in America paid any income tax. Over time, obviously, that has changed. But I think it would be a fine thing to get back to a point where you don't even start, a person doesn't even start paying income tax until they're making $35,000 or $40,000 a year. The median income in the United States is $44,000 a year. Maybe that should be the point at which people start paying income tax. Because they're already paying payroll taxes. You're already paying, you know, 8% plus your employer contribution. You're already paying 13, 14% tax. Plus you're paying sales tax. Plus you're paying property tax. Plus you're paying all these other hidden fees and taxes, you know, to register your car, to fill in the blank, right? To use your telephone tax, and so on. So anyhow, Germany is raising that. And they are cutting taxes for people in the very lowest income tax brackets. People who are earning between $8,000 and $20,000 a year U.S. The SPD, now this is the Social Democratic Party, which is doing this in coalition, the CDU-CSU. The SPD, this is another political party in the coalition. The SPU, headed by Franz Walter Steinmeier, foreign minister and vice chancellor, is pushing for a $40 billion stimulus, partly financed by a $2 billion increase on taxes for people earning over $125,000 a year. So the debate in Germany is, do we eliminate taxes or dramatically reduce taxes on people making very little, basically the working poor, or do we raise taxes on people making over $125,000 a year, or both? It's a good start. It's a good start. But this whole thing about the economy, what happens is, and Larry Beinhart just nailed this so brilliantly back in November over on Alternet. You can still find the article. Just, you know, Google Larry Beinhart Alternet taxes. He says high marginal tax rates correlate with economic growth. Examples include the World War II and Truman Eisenhower years when it was around 90% top tax rate, and the Clinton years when they were high relative to both the preceding and following administrations. Tax increases are followed by real economic growth. Moderate taxes are followed by a flat economy, and large tax cuts are followed by a boom, a bubble, and a crash. 1929, 1987, 2008, perfect examples. And then he says, you know, why would this be? And Larry uses an example very much like the one I used yesterday when Terry O'Connor and I ran the Woodley Herber Company, a herbal tea manufacturing company in the early 70s, and top tax rates were quite high, and I was approaching them. We were doing quite well there for a few years, and he says, I used to run a small business, commercial film production company. Every time we took a dollar out as personal income, it instantly turned into 50 cents, and that was my experience back in 73, 74, 75, 76. So if we didn't really need the money, Larry says, there was an incentive to keep it in the company and to find ways to spend it that took it out of taxable profit but increased the value of the company. High taxes create an incentive to reinvest profits into long-term growth. It's really that simple. It's really that simple. So, frankly, my advice to President Obama, which I know will be ignored because it is so inconsistent with conventional Republican wisdom and what a small percentage of misinformed Democrats believe to be true, is raise taxes. Don't roll back the Bush tax cuts. That's a given. Roll back the Reagan tax cuts. This country was growing slow but steady, solid growth. We were the industrial engine, the envy of the world from the 40s to the 80s. Roll back the Reagan tax cuts. Take the top rate on income taxes back up to 71%. For the wealthiest among us, and you know, and I say this knowing that I'm going to take a hit on this, but do it. Liz Smith, by the way, over in the New York Post, tip of the hat to Liz Smith. She is writing about how Lamar Waldron and my new book, Legacy of Secrecy, you know, lays out what happened. Who killed John Kennedy? Who killed Martin Luther King? It's really nice. It's nice to get some recognition in the New York Post. I think it's just great. In the second hour of our program, by the way, Russ Baker is going to come by. He's an investigative journalist. He's got a new book, Family of Secrets. I want to talk about the CIA and secrecy, and I'm going to give you a take on that in just a minute. But originally we had booked, in response to a contact from her booker, Ann Coulter, for our second hour. And the more I looked at this, we've had this debate, Louise and Sean and I, a number of times. And the more I looked at this, the more I thought, you know, this woman is just toxic. I mean, I have conservatives on this program almost every day of the week. This is arguably one of the most balanced programs when it comes to anything. We'll be right back. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
A big name in anti-aging right now is Dr. Arthur Perry. He's been all over TV. He's heard on radio. He has a practice in New York City on Fifth Avenue. Here's the twist, though. Dr. Perry is a plastic surgeon, but he likes to have his patients try a cream called Night Skin before they go schedule their procedures. Night Skin goes on while you sleep. It supports natural collagen and elastin production. So when you use Night Skin, it reduces the appearance of your fine lines. It makes your skin smoother. It even fades away those unwanted brown spots that come with age. Dr. Perry says many of his patients call off their procedure appointments after using Night Skin because they're that happy with the results they see in the mirror. Now Dr. Perry's Night Skin is available for anyone to get risk-free. Dial 1-800-542-6003. That's 1-800-542-6003. Call right away for your risk-free trial of the Night Skin Anti-Aging Cream. Dial 1-800-542-6003. That's 1-800-542-6003.
Are you waking up with Carl Wolfson and friends?
These are less popular suggestions. Abraham Lincoln.
6 to 9.
The Obama's first dog, what name it could be.
Promise, because he promised the girls and he promised us.
Elephant eater.
How about lipstick?
How about rogue?
You've got to have southpaw. I'd like to give it a local name and name it Mutt Safino, the weather dog.
It's Carl Wolfson.
As Abraham Lincoln said.
Morning 6 to 9. AM 620 KPOJ. Portland's only progressive talk station.
Tonight on ABC, we ask, what would you do if you saw a man drug a woman's drink in a bar?
He dropped something in that drink.
Or if you caught your married friend cheating. Or if someone you didn't even know needed your help. Would you step up to make a difference?
Take your hands off her.
Just keep walking. Tonight, what you'll see is so jaw-dropping, Oprah did a whole show just about what our hidden cameras catch. The all-new premiere of What Would You Do is tonight at 10, 9 Central on ABC, right after the premiere of Scrubs.
Why does this cough make me feel like my lungs are going to come out of my chest?
Robitussin knows one of the ways your body clears itself of mucus is by coughing. That's why Robitussin DM Max is formulated with a double dose of the medicine that helps your body clear away mucus compared to Robitussin DM, and it helps control your cough. Robitussin knows the relief you need. Robitussin DM Max. Double the strength against mucus for a reason. Use as directed.
The whole family came over to my house for a cookout. Mom was setting the table and, like always, giving us advice on how we should be raising our kids. All of a sudden, Mom dropped the forks. She didn't even try to pick them up.
Mom, are you okay?
Then she started slurring her words and acting confused. My sister told Mom to go lie down and rest a while, but I called 911. I had heard a speaker at church talk about stroke, and Mom's symptoms looked like stroke to me. I knew she had to get to a hospital and get treatment fast. An hour after Mom got to the hospital, she was talking normally. And she was her old self, believe me. The first thing she asked was who stayed home to look after the kids.
No stroke. Know the signs. Act in time. Call 1-800-352-9424 for more information. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, National Institutes of Health.
This is actor Angie Harmon working as a volunteer tutor
Here, she's teaching kids to spell habeas corpus. Here, prosecutable. Angie played a lawyer on TV.
To find out how you can volunteer in your community, go to usafreedomcorps.gov or call 1-877-USA-CORPS. When you help your neighbors, you help your nation. Make a difference. Volunteer. This public service message brought to you by USA Freedom Corps and the Ad Council.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Okay, so anyhow, welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program, by the way, brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act. Go to teamster.org for more information. So we had Ann Coulter scheduled for our second hour, and I finally just said, nah, not going to do it. I'm sorry. I mean, as I said, this is probably the most balanced of all the programs out there. I mean, you know, just bar none. Conservative, liberal, know-nothing, whatever. I mean, yes, there's some know-nothing shows out there, too. There are some hosts who just don't know a friggin' thing and just, you know, let their callers educate them, I suppose. But the Ann Coulter is just too much. Not even too much. It's the wrong phrase. She's just not going to be on this show. I'll leave it at that. End of discussion. A couple of thoughts here on all the blowback about Leon Panetta. And by the way, I'll get into that in the next segment. A couple of thoughts on Leon Panetta. There is a loud noise being made on the among many Democrats, actually. Dianne Feinstein, Jay Rockefeller, others, complaining that Leon Panetta has been picked to be the head of the CIA. There's a long history in the CIA of an internal conflict, as it were. It used to be the Yale guys, the college-educated guys versus the cowboys. And there's a certain dynamic there. But there's something larger going on right now. And because, by and large, I don't invite these folks on this show anyway. So, you know, if they're upset with me, it's really of little consequence to me, these politicians. Dianne Feinstein coming out and saying that she's implicitly saying that she's concerned that Leon Panetta is not an intelligence insider. Jay Rockefeller essentially saying the same thing, other members of Congress. I think it is time for there not to be an intelligence insider running the CIA. There is a reason why the founders of this country said that the President of the United States should be the commander of the military. In other words, the chief military officer of the United States is not a military man. Now, there have been a few exceptions, you know, George Washington, Ulysses Grant, Dwight Eisenhower. But they weren't made commanders of the military because they were military men. It simply happened to come along with the title of president. The founders were very clear that they wanted the military, something with that enormous power, something that's designed to, you know, blow things up and break things and kill people, to be controlled by a civilian. And I think having the CIA be under the control of, the administrative control of, now nobody thinks Leon Panetta is going to put on a trench coat and show up in Moscow someday going, hey, psst, got any information on Putin? You know, come on. But the guy is a brilliant administrator. He has spent 16 years in Congress. He knows his way around. He was chief of staff at the White House under Bill Clinton. He was on the Iraq study group. He oversaw all that intelligence. I think that the reason is that so much blowback is coming back against Panetta is because we have a relatively small group of very highly placed and influential Democrats and Republicans, the so-called Gang of Eight, and arguably a Gang of 12, who were brought in by the Bush administration and by George Tenet and told that we were doing torture, that we were wiretapping people's phones illegally, that we were rendering people to foreign prisons where they were being tortured and murdered, and they didn't stop it. And these people are complicit in the crimes of the Bush administration. And this is why I think these people would be very, very happy if somebody other than Leon Panetta, somebody from within the CIA, somebody who was also complicit in the crimes of the Bush administration, was heading the CIA, because then there'll never be an investigation of this. There'll never be any discussion about this. It'll get deep sixed. It'll get buried, and it won't reflect in an embarrassing fashion upon them. But the fact of the matter is that we have members of Congress who were complicit with the Bush administration in these crimes, and Leon Panetta was not. And for that reason, I congratulate, congratulate isn't even a strong enough word. I honor Barack Obama's decision to make Leon Panetta the head of the CIA, and I hope it sticks. I hope it sticks, because that's an organization that needs somebody who is very much an outsider to come in with a very effective broom and start cleaning it up and start identifying the problems, and not be afraid to say, oh, and by the way, there are a few members of Congress who were in on this too, and they should share some of the blame, even though they don't want it discussed. That's my take on it. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Truth is his weapon. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Up in Congress, and the sergeant at arms turns him away. This is the same sergeant at arms. Harry Reid directs this guy to turn away Roland Burris, but he never directed him to go arrest Karl Rove. What's wrong with this picture? I'm telling you, what is wrong with this picture? Oh, man. You know, there is a reason why we don't even bother to invite these people on this show, because I want to be able to speak truthfully about them. And I'm telling you, Harry Reid is such a huge disappointment to me. The Republicans say, filibuster, and he goes into a full-blown faint. They must have smelling salts in his office for him for whenever the Republicans say filibuster. And Roland Burris, arguably, there's a problem with Burris's nomination, and it's a legal problem. And that is that the Secretary of State of Illinois has not signed off on it. And it requires two signatures, the Secretary of State and the governor. And, you know, the same thing with Al Franken. He doesn't have the two signatures yet. So, you know, neither one of them are being seated. But, Harry, if you're going to use the sergeant at arms, use the sergeant-at-arms to go after Karl Rove and Harriet Myers and Alberto Gonzalez and Josh Bolton, all these people who have told you to shove it up your ear, and you have just simply said, well, we need to get something done. Meanwhile, you've got these, speaking of the election in Minnesota, we've got these absurd lies, and there's frankly no other word for it, lies, that the Republicans are putting out. If Barack Obama thought that by being a nice guy, the Republicans were going to be nice guys, I tell you, Barack Obama, you've got another think coming. I mean, you've got a whole lot of other things coming, because the Republicans are not going to be nice guys. The Republicans are lying already. Joe Scarborough, former Republican congressman from Florida, guy who, you know, there was a dead woman found in his office. I don't think most people even know about that. But nonetheless, Joe Scarborough on MSNBC talking about, and no, Joe was not implicated in it. In fact, he was out of town at the time. Let me just put that on the record right away before the conspiracies go off, you know, in full tilt boogie. But nonetheless, you know, can you imagine if a dead woman had been found in Bill Clinton's office, even if Bill was in California? Nonetheless, Joe Scarborough talking about, there was an op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal. Now, anybody can write an op-ed piece. Anybody can write a letter to the editor. It may not get published, but if it's sufficiently right-wing and if it's sufficiently crazy, there's a pretty good chance that Rupert Murdoch's Wall Street Journal, now that he owns it, and I've canceled my subscription, as have most rational people in the United States. Most of us are now reading the Financial Times to get our conservative financial news for the day. But nonetheless, the Wall Street Journal published an op-ed. This is not reporting. It was not done by a reporter. The Wall Street Journal never reported that double votes were being counted in Minnesota. They never reported that there were any hanky-panky or shenanigans. But, you know, tell that to Joe Scarborough.
We are. And also, Al Franken may be ruled the winner today. The Wall Street Journal is saying that there's some irregularities they need to investigate.
Now, first he says they're saying.
Vote counts. I'm sure there's going to be a big debate about that.
But it's not over.
It's not even close.
The final ballots in Minnesota's still undecided U.S. Senate race will be certified today. But that doesn't mean there is a winner. Democrat Al Franken has emerged with a 225-vote lead over incumbent Republican Norm Coleman. But now,
so now Joe has to come in with his little commentary.
Now there's a seven-day waiting period pending any new lawsuits.
And there will be lawsuits.
Yeah,
as we reported earlier, the Wall Street Journal is reporting today that there are a lot of a lot of discrepancies, a lot of inconsistencies. Double votes being counted, in fact.
It's
the Democratic Secretary of...
No, sorry, Joe. The Wall Street Journal is not reporting that there are double votes being counted. Even under the ownership of Rupert Murdoch, the Wall Street Journal would not go that crazy. They simply wouldn't. And back to the tax cuts. I want to just come back to this very briefly. I'm going to pick up your calls here. In 1981, the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities just issued this really great piece. Richard Kogan and Aviva Arandina wrote, claim that tax cuts pay for themselves is too good to be true. Data show there's no free lunch. The Republicans still believe this, and a lot of Democrats still believe this free lunch theory, that if you cut taxes, you stimulate the economy. You stimulate the economy so much that the increased in economic activity will generate more and more taxable income that will generate increased revenue over what you would have had if you'd simply had the taxes there in the first place. Sorry, it's a lie. In 1981, Congress approved very large supply-side tax cuts, dramatically lowering marginal income tax rates. In 90 and 93, by contrast, Congress raised marginal income tax rates on the well-off. What was the result? In the 1980s and the 1990s, virtually no difference in real per-person economic growth. Real person, in other words, the tax, cutting taxes or raising taxes did not change economic growth. Economic growth is a function of wages and people taking entrepreneurial activities. It's got nothing to do with taxes. Taxes don't affect economic growth. So anytime you hear any of these commentators, these multimillionaires on TV who pretend to be news guys, or the politicians on TV who pretend to know something about economics, saying that we've either got to raise or lower taxes to stimulate or slow down the economy, they are wrong. Taxes don't affect the economy. Tax rates have been as high as 91% during the period of the highest economic growth in the United States, 1935 to 1980. Taxes were very, very low during the Reagan time. It didn't have an impact on economic activity. What it did have an impact on was tax revenue, money going into the coffers. Real per person revenues grew twice as quickly when Bill Clinton jacked up taxes. What a surprise. Raised taxes, tax income goes up, as they did when they were decreased during the Reagan period. The result of that, we have to pay fewer taxes on the interest on the debt. Right now, the average American family is paying between $2,000 and $3,000 a year in income taxes just to service the debt run up by three presidents, George W. Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, and Ronald Reagan, arguably in reverse order. 866-303-2270, our telephone number, and Caleb in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Caleb, what's on your mind?
My gosh, Tom, you are just dead on correct. I mean, it's fun listening to you, especially now that you're giving up drinking. My thoughts are great. Anyway, you know, you quoted the Larry Beinhart article, which is a wonderful, wonderful article, and I've referred it off to people, too. Tom, do you think that one of the reasons why if we give the rich so much money that they lead to a boom and bust cycle, that there's a feeding frenzy, kind of like the red squirrel's nest that you talk about?
Yeah, although I would say it's not that. That's more of a middle-class phenomenon. But the red squirrel story is there was a study back 30 years ago where they had a suburban neighborhood and there was a bunch of – actually, I think they were gray squirrels. But in any case, whatever it was red deer is the story of democracy. But, you know, squirrels typically make nests that are of a certain size. And so these researchers went to a couple of the squirrels' nests and increased them, added leaves to them, and increased them by about 20% in size. And within a month or so, all the other squirrels within a mile or two had increased the size of their nests. And, you know, they were keeping up with the Joneses. Now, there's probably some biological basis for this. You know, the squirrels are all figuring at some deep unconscious DNA level that those squirrels must know something about how hard the winter's going to be, and we better get prepared. And so that's why I think that when in the United States on television, we went from seeing Lucille Ball in a rented walk-up apartment and Jackie Gleason in a cold water, fourth floor walk-up apartment in Manhattan in the 1950s and early 60s, from when we went to seeing average Americans living in average homes, to in the 80s during the greed is good era, suddenly everybody lived in a multi-million dollar mansion or, you know, Fraser and his $5 million penthouse. Yeah. Then Americans started saying, I got to have a bigger house. That's the squirrel phenomenon. But I think, you know, what happened with the tax cuts and the reason that you get these booms is because all of a sudden you got a bunch of billionaires, millionaires who suddenly have hundreds of millions of dollars more and they got to figure out someplace to put it. And so they're looking for it. And they're not building factories and they're not giving people jobs. That's a joke. What they're doing is they're looking for the place where they can get the biggest return on their investment. And so they start dumping the money into commodities. They start dumping the money into the Chinese stock market. They start dumping large amounts of money into things, into investments. And those investments rise in value because all this money's going into them. And then more money comes into them because they're going up in value. And everybody says, gee, I've got to get in on this. And it's a classic bubble. And that's why tax cuts on the rich always produce bubbles. And they always have. Make sense, Caleb? Pardon?
Doesn't it sound like a Ponzi scheme? I mean,
well, you know, yeah, a Ponzi scheme technically is where you're taking the money of recent investors and using it to pay off the interest on old investors so that everybody thinks that everything is going okay. And the most recent investors are the ones who lose everything, and the oldest investors actually make out very well in Ponzi schemes if they run, you know, over any period of time at all. And there's a bunch of Madoff's investors who, you know, the early investors that they're looking at right now. If you want a Ponzi scheme, Caleb, I would say, you know, look at what happened with derivatives. Derivatives are things that are just like magically made up. Derivatives are bets. Credit default swaps, we're going to bet that this mortgage isn't going to default. Weather derivatives, we're going to bet that there's not going to be a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico. They literally sold these bets to banks all over the world. That is a Ponzi scheme. We'll be right back.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Blindingly logical. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Provider and licensing details are available.
The other day I was thinking,
this year, I'm going to lose weight, get in shape, spend more time with family, get out of debt.
Let's move that to the top of the list. To make getting out of debt happen, I'm calling for Care One Credit Counseling Services. A Care One agent will work with my creditors to lower my monthly payments. That can save thousands of dollars in fees and interest payments. And I'll make one lower monthly payment instead of the dozens I make now. Care One agencies have helped over 4 million people get out of debt. And now it's my turn, my year.
Call 800-350-6564, 800-350-6564, for a free consultation and find out how you can lower your monthly payments up to 70%. One 15-minute phone call to a Care One agent can change your life. 800-350-6564, 800-350-6564.
Care One for you.
Ed Schultz.
Is this the man?
No, this is the man talking to the man. Ed Schultz, what's going on?
Noon to 3.
Barack Obama with us. I know you voted for the farm bill. Can you speak to the folks in the heartland on ag and energy?
I come from the heartland, and I come from an agricultural state. My record goes back 10 years.
The Ed Schultz Show.
What I'm most concerned about are family farmers and family ranchers.
Noon to 3.
We've got to make sure that they're getting help, not just big agribusiness.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Online at 620kpoj.com.
Tonight on ABC, we ask, what would you do if you saw a man drug a woman's drink in a bar?
He dropped something in that drink.
Or if you caught your married friend cheating. Or if someone you didn't even know needed your help. Would you step up to make a difference?
Take your hands off her.
Just keep walking. Tonight, what you'll see is so jaw-dropping, Oprah did a whole show just about what our hidden cameras catch. The all-new premiere of What Would You Do is tonight at 10, 9 Central on ABC, right after the premiere of Scrubs.
Here's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ.
KPOJ and WorkSource Oregon are teaming up for the 2009 Career Fair, Wednesday, January 14th from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at the Lloyd Center Mall. This is a great opportunity to hook up with those hiring in the greater Portland area or find the education you need to advance your career. Meet employers and educators from around the state all in one place, January 14th at Lloyd Center Mall. KPOJ in Clearwater invite you to join us at the Crystal Ballroom Tuesday, January 20th for the People's Inaugural Ball, a benefit for the Oregon Food Bank. The ball is free with a ticket from KPOJ and a suggested donation of 2 cans of food. Entertainment and a silent auction are a couple fun things to expect. Keep listening to KPOJ for complete details on how to win your tickets to this 21 and over only event. Stop by EcoFloors, located on 47th and Southeast Milwaukee Avenue. Pick up a KPOJ bumper sticker and find out about special discounts just for being a KPOJ listener.
And that's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's progressive talk station.
Would you like to add native plants to your yard but aren't quite sure of what species to plant where? I'm Callie Robson, owner of Nothing But Northwest Natives Nursery in Woodland, Washington, and I can help. I'm offering seminars on natives for birds, for butterflies, wet areas, shade gardens, and other landscape situations. Buy tickets for yourself or as a gift for a progressive gardener. For information and registration, call 360-225-6440 or visit nothingbutnwnatives.com.
You will find prices
so low
at DaveSmith.com. Dave Smith Motors is confident that you will find
the lowest of low prices
on over 1,500 new Dodge, Chrysler, Jeep, Chevy, GMC, Pontiac, Buick, Cadillac, and top quality pre-owned vehicles. People all over the United States buy from DaveSmith.com.
We are confident it is worth buying
from DaveSmith.com. Get your
low price today.
800-635-8000 or DaveSmith.com.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Out on the highway, I hear the moan in that low and lonesome whisper. You only know from long and through those naked trees. Got the windows glowing orange, taking over that cold shoulder racing by. I'd have known before if I'd got this soul before. I thought I got too cool to give a damn.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, brought to you by you, our listeners, supporting our advertisers, supporting our radio stations. Hey, give them a call and let them know you're listening. Tell your friends. Pass it along. It's important stuff. Glad to have you with us. And time for our Caught You Doing Something Right alert for the week. Congratulations to Ron Reagan, my friend, brilliant guy, one of America's best broadcasters, one of America's most savvy observers of the political scene, and a guy who I watched, actually I wasn't there watching it happen, I was there moments later, a monkey pee on, and nonetheless, Ron Reagan has decided to come to the aid of the chimps. Hey, Ron.
Hello, Tom. Good morning. Well, you know, chimps are actually apes and not monkeys.
You're right.
So,
you're right. Thank you for the correction.
There, I suppose.
Thank you for the correction. And so you and I were in where was it, Belize?
I think we were actually in Mexico by this time,
in
on
Mexico.
The Yucatan Peninsula, and I,
yeah,
I had
right.
an encounter with a monkey that was plying the tourists. You know, he was shilling for $5 tips to have his picture taken with you, and when I refused to have my picture taken with him, he peed down the front of my shirt.
Yes, I remember you had when you came to lunch with that shirt, and a very pleasant aroma it was.
That's right. Well, no hard feelings.
So you have taken up the cause of chimps and monkeys who are caught in medical situations. Tell us about this.
Well, my wife and I, about a year ago, became aware of a place called Chimp Haven. It's down in Louisiana here. And, you know, chimpanzees have been used in medical research as well as in, you know, various entertainment venues, circuses and the like, for quite some time. In the 1980s, we began breeding many more of them, thinking that we would need them for medical research. By the 90s, research protocols had changed, and so we ended up with a lot of surplus chimpanzees. We use chimps in medical research, of course, because they're so closely related to us. But what we have now are a lot of these you know, very intelligent animals who live to be 50 or 60 years old, who have no place in medical research, and we can argue about the ethics of that, you know, in and of itself, but have no place to go, essentially. And Chimp Haven down in Louisiana opened up back in, I think it was 2005, they opened their doors, and they've got about 100 chimps down there now. And they do get some grants from the government, but they need people's donations. And you can go to Chimp Haven, that's C-H-I-M-P-H-A-V-E-N, .org, chimphaven.org, and you can make a donation, and you can essentially adopt a chimp. They've, you know, they'll give you the pictures, the names of all these chimps, and you can send money to specific chimps, or you can just send money to Chimp Haven, you know, as a whole, and they'll distribute it. Or if you really want to give the chimps a treat, send them pomegranates. Apparently, they love pomegranates.
So do I. Must be because we share 99.3% of our DNA with them, or something like that. It's some
some huge amount of our DNA. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Well, Ron, and have you sent them a note saying just make sure that none of them are related to that damn monkey down in Mexico?
That's right. Yeah, that was a stipulation for my donation. But we donate every year now. We send a check down to the chimps, and you know, they'll send you a little information about your particular chimp, you know, if you want. It's a lot of fun, and you're just doing a good thing for, you know, some animals that have given a lot to us, basically.
That's great. Ron, I want to congratulate you on that. I'm going to get back to a couple of my calls here, but
sure.
Thanks so much for dropping by and sharing with us what you're doing. I think it's
you bet, Tom. Have a good show.
Thank you. And people can read about it, by the way, on your blog over at airamerica.com. So always great to have Ron Reagan on. 866-303-2270, your telephone number. Jim in Portland. Hey, Jim.
Yeah, hey. Glad to talk to you on your national forum. And this is a serious forum, and I applaud your decision not to have the Coulter person on, because this is not a serious person.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody who's dumb enough to take the Coulter seriously doesn't understand that Stephen Colbert is a satirist, thinks that The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn is racist, and that Jonathan Swift ate babies.
Yeah. You know, closest that we came to this was when I had Jerome Corsi on, and in that case, because he had made up all these lies about John Kerry, I got him on and I said, okay, Jerome Corsi, is it you know, true that you just got out of jail for being arrested for whatever, you know, molesting somebody or something? And he's like, no, I never did. And I just hit him with phony charge after phony charge, and it took him like 15 minutes to realize that he was being spoofed. But and you know, and then he got outraged and hung up. But you know, and typically I don't do that either. I mean, I look for people who actually are on the other side and believe what they have to say, and we can have a reasonable conversation, and we can model how to have debate, and how people can, you know, have an argument with their brother-in-law over Thanksgiving and not end up with blood on the floor. And I think that, you know, that's my public service, and I think it also makes great radio. But there are certain limits, and I agree with you, Jim. I think that she's over the top, and in fact, at this point, henceforth and forevermore, that name shall not be mentioned on this show. Mike in Portland. Hey, Mike.
It's regarding the choice of Leon Panetta as CIA director.
Yeah,
I find it curious that we, you know, if we're going to expect the head of the CIA to be James Bond, how come we don't insist that the NASA administrator be an astronaut?
Yeah, good point. Yeah, it's and there are some, you know, I mean, police chiefs are very often old cops and things like that. I mean, there are places where you see that kind of thing. But the bottom line is the CIA is this large institution. It's a large organization that does a whole variety of things in addition to spycraft. But, you know, that's the focus of it. But it, at its heart, it is a bureaucracy. It is a large, a very large organization. And it needs somebody running it who knows how to run large organizations, who has experience with running large organizations. And Leon Panetta does. Within government. This is a governmental organization. It's a different skill set than, you know, Carly Fiorina being head of HP. It's a completely different skill set. And I think that Leon Panetta is going to be a great head of the CIA. I congratulate this. I think it is high time. I think, you know, the low point of the CIA was when George Herbert Walker Bush was brought in to head the thing. He theoretically didn't have any background, but frankly, I believe that he was a CIA, at least informant prior to that. But nonetheless, it's been downhill. I mean, George Tenet was a disaster, for example. I mean, there's, and Porter Goss, even worse. You know, finally somebody who's competent. Russ Baker coming up next. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Is there a, you know, shadow government is such an overused phrase, but is there an essential apparatus, an essential set of people and systems and perhaps most importantly networks in place in Washington, D.C. that at a certain level it really doesn't even matter who's president of the United States or who's in Congress or which party controls what, that there is a government behind the government? And one with which Barack Obama and company are going to have to reckon. They're going to have to deal. Russ Baker is a brilliant investigative journalist. He's written for The New Yorker, Vanity Fair, New York Times, The Nation, L.A. Times, et cetera, et cetera. Contributing editor to the Columbia Journalism Review. The founder of the Who, What, Why, the Real News Project, which is at whowhatwhy.com. And his new book, and this is a tome. It's nearly the same size as our new book, A Legacy of Secrecy. I'm pushing 500 pages here. Family of Secrets, the Bush Dynasty, the powerful forces that put it in the White House, and what their influence means for America. Russ Baker, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Tom. It's a pleasure.
Russ, you write in this book about how there is this essentially an oligarchy that is running the United States, and that the Bush family, arguably since Prescott, but certainly since the rise of Poppy, has been the point person for it. Tell us about this.
Sure, and just for context, I'm an investigative reporter, and I work simply from questions that arise, and I follow those questions, and whatever facts come, I don't care what ideology they support, I follow the facts. And I think what I believe distinguishes what I have discovered and what is contained in Family of Secrets is a whole sort of uncovered history of this country. I began this project 5 years ago with the simple question, how did George W. Bush become president of the United States? It struck me as such a remarkable thing. I was living abroad at the time, actually training journalists in the former Yugoslavia how to investigate their own governments. And they asked me, well, what about yours? I mean, how much do you know about what's going on there? How do you explain the Iraq War? And I realized I didn't have any good answers. We were all opining, of course, but we really didn't have too many facts. And so I began asking some simple questions about how it was that so much money lined up behind this fellow, and what was really the story behind it. And that led me to re-examine not just him, but his father, the relationship between him and his father, because after all, he would never have been president if his father had not been president. And then I found how little we knew about the father, and this essentially led me down a kind of a rabbit's hole to a whole new history of this country of which I was completely unaware.
So give us the outlines of that history, please.
Sure, sure. Well, in a nutshell, just a few things sort of raised my eyebrows quite a bit. You may know this from your own Kennedy research. The father is known for a number of strange things. Number one, he was director of the CIA in 1976, and he was considered a neophyte, sort of the same thing people are talking about now with Leon Panetta. Why is this guy being put in charge of the CIA? He has no background in intelligence, no experience, and it's a very, very sensitive moment in the nation's history. And nobody ever resolved that question. Well, I did when I discovered documents, declassified CIA documents, showing a relationship between Poppy Bush, the father, and the intelligence community, predating his CIA directorship by 20-some years.
Oh, yeah, look at Zapata Oil Company.
Yes, and in fact, people have always wondered about Zapata, but these documents actually show that his offshore company was co-founded with an active-duty CIA officer who, quote-unquote, resigned from the agency to help him start this firm. Now, that starts putting a little bit of meat on the bones of what some people thought. And then there's some other...
Also, the other thing that's interesting, here's just an interesting coincidence for you, Russ. You know, Poppy Bush owns Zapata Oil Company. Zapata Oil had these offshore, never made any money, had these offshore rigs around Cuba that were widely believed to be listening stations. You know the official code, the CIA code operation for the Bay of Pigs invasion?
Yeah, Operation Zapata.
There you go. And the two ships, the Barbara J and the Houston? I mean, come on. it's like,
right, right.
It's like,
well,
let's wave flags.
Yeah, yep. Tom, what I do in Family of Secrets is I try to go beyond, because some of those things certainly have been in the realm of conjecture for many, many years. I go way beyond those things.
Yeah.
The book has more than 1,000 footnotes. I interviewed probably 600 or 700 people, thousands of documents. And here's what I've got. Number one, Poppy Bush says he cannot remember where he was on November 22, 1963. Now, at the time, he was 40 years old. He was himself a Texan, and he was at the moment that John F. Kennedy was shot in Dallas. Poppy Bush was campaigning for the United States Senate from Texas.
Right.
So people have always known about that, thought that was strange. And I've got 4 chapters in my book with new information on the Kennedy assassination. This was all new to me. I was never somebody who had any theories on that. I guess maybe I was somebody who thought maybe Oswald had done it. I just had never really paid that much attention. But once I started focusing in on this family's history and looking at him, I started finding all this other interesting stuff. For example, Poppy Bush was a close personal friend for many years. With a man who was essentially the closest father figure to Lee Harvey Oswald, who essentially sort of managed Lee Harvey Oswald's life in the year prior to the assassination. I also discovered that Poppy Bush made a phone call the day of the assassination, a few hours after it. He called from not far outside of Dallas to create a paper trail showing that he was, in fact, not in Dallas at that moment. All of that is detailed in the book. I think people will find it fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. You also talk in the book about George W. Bush's religious conversion and the
right.
significance of it, the how and the why of that. Talk about that for a minute.
Right. Again, I always wondered, one doesn't want to try to speculate about what's in anyone's heart, and it's generally been off limits for journalists to question his conversion story, but I always wondered about it, and I was fortunate enough to spend a great deal of time with a man who was actually the political religious advisor to the Bush family, and in spending a whole day with him at his home, he began showing me memories that he had sent to the Bush family, essentially well before George W. Bush decided to become born again. This man was writing memos at the request of the Bush family, telling them what they needed to do in order to win over the enormous and growing evangelical vote.
Right. Well, in fact, wasn't George W. put in charge of getting the evangelical vote for his dad in the election of 92?
That's exactly right. And I think one of the other interesting things is that a lot of people have always made fun of George W. Bush and sort of treated him as a dim bulb. But in fact, according to the people that I interviewed, he's extremely wily. He does have these sort of apparent learning disabilities and a short attention span and so on, but not stupid by any measure, and very, very calculating. And particularly in the sort of dark arts, intelligence-related and propaganda-related things that he learned from his father.
So the big question, Russ, we're talking with Russ Baker, his new book, Family of Secrets, The Bush Dynasty, The Powerful Forces That Put It in the White House and What Their Influence Means to America, and RussBaker.com and FamilyofSecrets.com, if I have that right, Russ.
That's right.
The shadow government that has followed Bush Sr. and Bush Jr., and arguably down in Florida, Jeb. You know, Bush Sr. famously over the weekend suggested Jeb should be the next president of the United States. To what extent, and we just have a minute left here, I'm sorry, to what extent is that shadow government there intact and a force to be reckoned with by the new administration?
I am told that the Central Intelligence Agency always considers the president to be a temporary occupant of that office, and that it is an urgent priority for them to have their own people surrounding the president wittingly and unwittingly. I've got a couple of chapters on Richard Nixon and what I think actually happened to him at the hands of the CIA. I think Barack Obama has a lot to be concerned about, and I hope people do pick up the book and talk about this, because the time is now to figure out whether we can deal with this.
Could this be a reason why he picked an outsider, Leon Panetta, to head up the CIA?
Absolutely. I think it is. I think he's alarmed. I think he's concerned about this, and he knows that his freedom of movement is somewhat limited, both by the intelligence community and by the military-industrial complex. I think it's the same thing that Jimmy Carter tried to do when he brought in Admiral Turner. It's very, very difficult to try to get control on these people. They really do not respect the democratic process.
Yeah, remarkable. Russ Baker, brilliant writer and investigative reporter. Family of Secrets, the books, The Bush Dynasty, The Powerful Forces That Put It in the White House, and What Their Influence Means for America, familyofsecrets.com, russbaker.com. Russ, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Tom.
And for your yeoman's work on this book. Well done. 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeehaw is not a foreign policy. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
You ever have one of those days where everything goes right? First, I get the best parking space at work. Tonight, I have a date with the very lovely Rachel. And today, I gave a killer presentation in Sydney, finalized a contract in London, and demoed our new product in Boston. Online, from my desk, with WebEx. WebEx lets me take meetings and give presentations from my desk. I just talk to clients on the phone, and they watch what's happening on my desktop from their desktop. So I can travel the world and still be here for my date tonight with Rachel.
Travel less, meet online. Go to WebEx.com and try WebEx free. Just click the radio graphic and enter promo code BLUE to get a free trial and a free webcam, too. Remember that code, BLUE, to qualify for the free webcam. WebEx, now part of Cisco, and used by more than 5.5 million people every month. Give it a try. Free. Go to WebEx.com and enter the promo code BLUE. WEBEX.com. Free webcams available while supplies last. Terms and restrictions apply. See website for details.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
Didn't he look like he's used to having shoes thrown at him? I mean, seriously, didn't the president look completely comfortable with that shoe coming at his head?
Randy Rhodes.
He uses like his best cheerleader skills, and he's bobbing and weaving. And he stood there just like on 9/11 and stared into the crowd.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
You're at a podium, you dimwit. Get down.
3 to 6.
And between shoes, he had that same dimwitted look on his face that he had on 9/11 when he was sitting there reading my Petco.
On AM 620 KPOJ.
Hi, Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, your ally in a bad economy. We'll make sure you're not wasting your money or unknowingly running your vehicle into the ground. We provide value by offering quality service in a logical, prioritized manner, focusing on safety recommendations first, breakdown items next, and then your maintenance needs. Trust is the main reason people use our service. Our clients know we deliver comprehensive, honest, no BS service. We won't sell unneeded or random nonsense. Our service advisors aren't paid sales commission, so you can trust they're recommending services you need, not just building a paycheck. We're an ASE Blue Seal of Excellence facility, and our technicians efficiently service your vehicle right the first time. We offer a no-hassle 18-month, 18,000-mile warranty, free shuttle service, and in this economy, our same as cash financing can help. Let our existing clients tell you why they choose us. Go to our website at tomdwyer.com and watch the detailed client testimonials and call us at 503-230-2300. Please let us help you preserve your car and your cash.
With Medicare Part D, you'll pay about the same copay anywhere. No wonder seniors are choosing America's most trusted pharmacy, Walgreens. There's no more shopping around for price, so join the millions by transferring your prescriptions to Walgreens. Just bring in your bottles and they'll do the rest. Not only will you get great service and convenience at Walgreens, you'll also feel safer knowing you have just one pharmacy helping you manage all your medicines. Walgreens accepts most Medicare Part D plans.
And now for the bonus round. If a train leaves Cleveland traveling at 54 miles per hour, what time is it?
6:24 a.m.
Correct. Plastic is to megawatt, as a unicorn is to...
goulash!
Correct. How much extra does it cost to watch some Netflix movies instantly on your computer?
Nothing.
Correct! Netflix! DVDs by mail fast, plus some movies stream instantly to your computer. No late fees ever. Start your free trial today. Netflix!
See terms of use.
What are you doing in the next 15 minutes? You could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance. All it takes is a quick visit to GEICO.com or a quick call. 1-800-947-AUTO.
The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face. If you experience this, call 911 immediately. Visit StrokeAssociation.org or call 1-888-4STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
It's a place where progressives come to party, the Tom Hartman radio program. And, boy, that's a little bit hot there. Anyhow, the Liberal Talk Radio. There's a blog out there, ltradio.blogspot.com. If you Google Liberal Talk Radio, it comes up as one of the top blogs. And they had been running a contest of sorts, who's your favorite liberal talk radio host? And there were a few people who mentioned it on the air to try to drive up their votes. I did not. Never mentioned it. Not once. And I think it's fascinating. The top 10 talkers of the year, they took a poll of their readers. And most of these people are people who did not lobby on the air for it, as I did not. And here's the list. And I think this is great. Number 10, Sam Cedar. Number 9, Randy Rhodes. Number 8, Bill Press. Number 7, Mark Thompson. Mark is on Sirius Satellite Radio. He and I have done each other's shows a number of times. Number 6, Stephanie Miller. Number 5, Lynn Samuels. She's on Sirius. Number 4, Rachel Maddow. Number 3, Alex Bennett. Alex is on Sirius. Number 2, me. And number 1, Mike Malloy. Interesting. So I tip of the hat to the folks at ltradio.blogspot.com and to all the listeners and voters and folks who voted. And it's really cool being voted the number 2 talk radio host in America. We do have more listeners than any other progressive show, as far as we can tell. And it's nice to have it validated. Claims of others notwithstanding. You are being lied to about pirates. This is a blog that Johan, I'm not sure how he pronounces it, Hari, he's a columnist with the London Independent, wrote. It appeared over on Huffington Post. I don't know if they picked it up from the London Independent or if he wrote it for them, but credit where credit's due and all that kind of thing. He talks about, first of all, how pirates are generally viewed as the bad guys, but the fact of the matter is the pirates were the first people to rebel against this world. They were the first to say no or no thanks or no way or whatever. that you know that pirates were the original rebels. They were also the original small d democratic group. They shared their bounty with each other. They were famously egalitarian pirates. They elected their captains. Now, this is by and large. They even took in escaped African slaves and lived with them as equals. And there's no shortage, by the way, of very good books documenting this. So now we've got this pirate problem in Somalia. And everybody's assuming that it's just a black and white thing, that there's a bunch of Somalis who, because Somalia is essentially a failed state, and because you can get a boat and you can get some weapons there, that they're going out and hijacking these tankers, and they're bad guys, and they're pirates, and we should blow them all to hell. Turns out there's a story behind the story. As Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story. The author of this blog, Johan Hari, was talking to the UN envoy to Somalia, by a guy by the name of Abdemo Obdul Abdallah, the UN envoy to Somalia, who told him on the record, and I quote, "Somebody is dumping nuclear material here." Now, this was, a year or so ago. This was in 2005 or 2004. Somebody is dumping nuclear material. There's also lead and heavy metals such as cadmium and mercury, you name it. End of quote. Then after the tsunami in 2005, which scoured the coast of Somalia, hundreds of these dumped and leaking barrels washed up on shore full of nuclear waste and toxic waste. And people began to die. Hundreds of people died from radiation sickness. And the last time people died from radiation sickness was after Chernobyl. People dying from radiation sickness in Somalia. Turns out that the Italian mafia and apparently some other groups had been using the Somali coast as a dumping ground for toxic waste. Now, on top of that, then a couple of European countries and a couple of Asian countries moved in and started, and this is offshore, 10 miles offshore, and started stealing the fish, tuna, shrimp, lobster, other sea life. They estimate $300 million a year worth of seafood being stolen from Somali waters by trawlers from other countries, simply because Somalia, is a failed state. They had no navy to protect their waters. So a bunch of local fishermen said, to hell with that, and they got boats and they went out and they started shooting at these trawlers that were stealing their fish. And when they saw people dumping toxic waste, they started shooting at them too. These are the people who became the pirates. There's always more to the story, isn't there? This is why 70% of the citizens of Somalia strongly support piracy as a form of national defense of the country's territorial waters. The verbatim quote from the survey. Yeah. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
What would Hartman do? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And wow, is that hot? I'm sorry. Here we go. There we go. Time for our Full Monty Award.
Baby, take off your coat. Real slow.
Well, okay.
Baby, take off your shoes.
Yeah, I suppose. If you're going to be indoors in a coffee shop, you can take your shoes off, yeah.
Baby, take off your dress.
Uh-oh.
Yes, yes, yes. You can't leave your hat on.
Leave your hat on, yeah. Well, that's what they're doing in Central Maine. In Valsboro, Maine, a one-time motel in a small central Maine town will soon be offering an eye-opening way to start the day. Topless coffee shop waitresses. Right. The Valsboro Planning Board on Tuesday is going to consider a business permit request for a topless coffee shop on busy Route 3 in Valsboro, Maine. Some of the residents are going, hey, wait a minute, we're a small town. Do we really want to bring this kind of a clientele into town? Others are saying, hey, if it makes money, if it adds to the tax base, what's wrong with that? It's an interesting question. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Rick, welcome to the show.
Happy New Year, Tom.
Well, Happy New Year to you, Rick.
And I want you to know you're number one in my book.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
And fascinating interview you had with the gentleman last half hour, and that was a real eye-opener about the topless coffee shop. I love coffee, and I think if we had that kind of thing in GR, that would really help. But anyway.
It would really shake up the Calvinists there in Grand Rapids.
Yeah, well, we're a fairly large town, but we're kind of small-minded here in those respects. But anyway, yeah. I want to get right to the point here. I've been watching, between listening to you, I've been kind of watching the cable stations and C-SPAN, and as you know, they're swearing in the new folks today, senators and congressmen.
Right.
And I guess in the case of Colorado and New York, the governors of those states have not moved to fill those two seats, so that's understandable. But I just wanted to ask you what your opinion was on whether Mr. Burris and Mr. Franken should have been sworn in today.
The legality of it is that in the case of Illinois, the state, the Secretary of State has not signed off on the, yes, this guy is our senator, and that's required for him to be legally
Well, you know,
seated.
What's interesting about that, no less a conservative than Pat Buchanan says that that Secretary of State is actually violating his oath of office by not signing off on it.
And I agree. I think he is. Let me say, this is an only moderately informed opinion. I don't put myself forward as an expert on all things political in the state of Illinois. I've never read the Illinois Constitution, for example. I have read the constitutions of Michigan and Oregon, but not
right.
Illinois. So I don't know. But if the Secretary of State in Illinois is refusing to sign off on this thing just because he's going along with the Democratic Party and their collective embarrassment, then yeah, he's breaking the law and he needs to sign off on it. And Roland Burris should be seated as a senator. I think that Harry Reid and the senators in the United States Senate put their foot in their mouth hugely by inserting themselves into Illinois politics. I don't think they ever should have. They should have simply let it play out in Illinois. Let the people of Illinois deal with it.
Where do you stand on Franken, then?
Well, with regard to Al Franken, again, you've got to have the Secretary of State and the governor sign off on the certificate. And
I think they've done that, Tom, and I'll tell you what happened. I called Senator Cornyn's office of Texas, who's... because there's two differences. There's one difference here. The Democrats are trying to block Burris. The Republicans will try to stop Franken. And what I heard from the Cornyn office was that even though he has been certified in Minnesota, it takes a week for that to have an effect. I mean, I never heard of that before. That's like a bank saying a check has to clear in a day or two. You know, have you ever
Well,
heard
what
that?
It is, if, first of all, I don't think that they've signed off on it. I think what the group that signed off on it was the Election Commission. Or whatever its title
you could be
is
right. You could
in
be
Minnesota.
Right.
The group that is charged with counting the ballots, they have signed off and said, okay, this is our official result. The Secretary of State is a Democrat. The Republican, Tim Pawlenty, is a Republican in Minnesota. And I'd be astounded if Tim Pawlenty had signed off on this thing. I wouldn't be surprised if the Secretary of State has. I frankly don't know. But the 7 days is that state law in Minnesota provides a 7-day window after the certification of the election by the election board for the loser to challenge in court the election.
And Coleman says he's going to do that, I guess.
And Coleman says he's going to do that. The same Coleman, by the way, who when he was ahead of Franken in the count back a month or so ago, suggested that that Franken should not ask for a recount. He shouldn't, even though it was automatic, he shouldn't go along with the recount, that he should simply, recuse himself or declare, that Coleman was the winner and pull himself out of the race at that point to save the state the money and trouble of doing the recount.
I was going to say, Tom, what troubles me about the Illinois situation is, I'll just call him Blago because I can't pronounce it, but he's not going anywhere. And if he's just going to stay there, and this impeachment procedure or the investigation by Patrick Fitzgerald drags on and on before they can remove him, does that mean Illinois has to go without a senator all those months?
Yeah, it does, apparently.
Something has to be done,
at least if Harry Reid has his way. I think this is, as I said, once more, this is a great example of the Democratic leadership in the Senate putting their foot in their mouths. And I think it's a shame. It's a real shame. Harry Reid never should have gotten involved in this, in my personal opinion. And frankly, if he wants to be such an activist, why isn't he using his activist, if he's got a few activist bones in his body and he can get all the Democrats to sign off on something, why aren't they signing off on let's put Karl Rove in jail?
Well, they just want to please the Republicans, maybe, and there'll be no pleasing those folks.
Yeah, there you go. Rick, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you. Happy
New Year to you. Good to hear from you. Mark in Wisconsin. Hey, Mark.
Hi, Tom. Enjoy your program. Talked to you in the past. Say, I just wanted to get your feedback on this Israel-Gaza thing. And it seems awfully frightening that Israel, when there was a truce, awfully struck right before Christmas Gaza with a force. And somewhere, I don't know, I was drinking coffee, and I thought, this is the underhand backstage workings of Karl Rove, Cheney, and Bush.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that Israel would not consult with the U.S. administration before doing something this large. And there's a large body of commentators out there, across the spectrum, right to left, who are suggesting that they wanted to do this before the Obama administration came in because they knew that the Bush administration would go along with it. Keep in mind, you've got a bunch of people in the Bush administration, born-again Christians, who believe that if they can have a full-blown, that the two criteria that are still unmet, or the three criteria that are still unmet for the return of Jesus Christ to earth are, number one, the rebuilding of the temple, Solomon's temple, which means tearing down the Dome of the Rock, and building that temple up on that hill there behind the Wailing Wall. Number two, returning Israel to its original borders, taking the whole country. And number three, it's like 2,000-year-old borders. And number three, there being an all-out war on the plain of Armageddon, which is up in the northern West Bank. And so, they're just like gung-ho for any kind of war that they can have there. And I think the Obama administration would be a little more circumspect and a little more interested in negotiation and peace. And there is some speculation, and I think that it has some credence that the right wing within Israel was aligning itself with the right wing within the United States. Mm-hmm. That said, there's a huge debate in Israel, and I encourage our American listeners, and thanks, Mike, for bringing this up, to go read Haaretz, haaretz.com. It's the oldest Israeli newspaper. It's a very highly well-respected newspaper. You'll get a broad, and read the Jerusalem Post as well. The Jerusalem Post is more conservative. Haaretz is more liberal. You'll get the entire spectrum of debate that's happening in Israel that, oddly enough, other than on this program, isn't happening in the United States. And there are a variety of opinions, and I think, frankly, with good reason. Bob in Seattle. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind today?
Oh, yeah. Hi, Tom. Regarding the real possibility of a filibuster by Senate Republicans on the Obama economic stimulus package, I think most of us believe that the U.S. is on the verge of the second Great Depression.
I think we're already in it.
And many credible economists feel that a rapid and powerful economic stimulus is absolutely mandatory now. I certainly believe in thoughtful bipartisan action by people of goodwill, but purely partisan obstruction of this economic package is absolutely intolerable now. And if a clear Republican cooperation of a constructive nature is not forthcoming, I think that the Senate Democrats should initiate their own nuclear option, which I believe they can do by a simple majority, and reduce the number of votes to move the legislation forward to 55. And I fully realize that this is a big step, and this always comes back to haunt you when you're in the minority. But I think that if there ever was a time to do it, it's probably now.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Although frankly, there's a huge step that has not been taken between blowing away the filibuster rule, which would then only require 51 votes, you know, to pass, or 50 votes if you've got a vice president who's of your party, which is the case now, or will be in 2 weeks. There's a huge step between blowing away the filibuster rule and simply rolling over when the Republicans say filibuster and going into a full faint, as Harry Reid does. And that middle step is the old-fashioned thing of saying, you know, as Bernie Sanders has recommended a number of times on this show, and as I keep saying, Harry Reid should say, oh, you want a filibuster? Fine, start talking. We'll bring in the cots. We'll bring in a bucket you can pee in. We'll order pizza. We're going to go 24-7. You can talk all you want. You can have your filibuster. You can let all of America know that you don't want there to be economic recovery, or you don't want people to be able to have unions, or you don't want environmental protection, or whatever it is you want to filibuster, we'll let you filibuster.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoying Republicans by defending the Constitution. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Tom Hartman here. You've heard me talk a lot about the special men's vitamin called Beta Prostate. I keep bringing it up because every single man listening should take care of their prostate health. When you're younger, your prostate gland is about the size of a walnut, but as you grow older, it can swell up to the size of a lemon. This could mean getting up at night for bathroom trips, difficulty urinating, even sexual dysfunction. So you got to see your doctor for checkups and take Beta Prostate every day. Not too long ago, we invited the formulator of Beta Prostate, research chemist Roger Mason, on my show. He told us that prostate problems are a growing epidemic, and statistics say that three-quarters of all American men will eventually have prostate problems. And now Roger Mason will be extending his special offer, buy two, get one free. And he's even throwing in his book, The Natural Prostate Cure, for free, plus a money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-954-8255. 0803. That's 1-800-954-0803. Call now because this is an amazing value. 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
This is a change in the definition of what America is.
Rachel Maddow.
We've long had a very, 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 very diverse country. We just have been very resistant to the idea that our government ought to look as diverse as our country. That has now changed. But it is also a big day for the Democratic Party. And it is a very big day for the Republican Party.
Rachel Maddow.
Which now has no obvious leader, no clear direction.
Evening 6 to 8.
No clear guiding ideology, either economically or in terms of foreign policy.
On AM 620 KPOJ.
If you need dental work, but you just can't bring yourself to go, Dr. Floyd Cash can relate. As a child, he had a bad experience at the dentist and didn't want to go back.
I was worried about going a whole week ahead of time, and I couldn't sleep the night before, and the more I went, the worse it got.
Dr. Cash runs Sleep Dentistry of Portland, dedicated to helping people who have trouble going to the dentist. From oral sedation to IV sedation, or even general anesthesia, Sleep Dentistry of Portland offers the dental work you need in a gentle, non-judgmental atmosphere.
That's what I've been doing since the first day I opened. I've tried to be the gentle dentist, mainly because I knew what had bothered me, so I was trying not to create that in anybody else.
Your introductory appointment is just a dollar, including full examination, any necessary x-rays, and consultation. Get the details at sleepdentistryofportland.com or call 503-405-7686. Sleep Dentistry of Portland.
Hey, Carl Wolfson here. One of the many perks for our listeners is getting exclusive deals from our loyal advertisers, and here's one you can't afford to pass up. During January, Floor Trends Northwest is offering free basic installation on any carpet purchase over 50 yards. That's a savings of more than $600. They're also offering up to 50% off all overstock carpet and hardwood. Now is the time to take advantage of these huge discounts only for KPOJ listeners and only at Floor Trends Northwest in Selwood.
Now is the time to call AquaCare. If you looked at your carpet lately, happens at my house too. Winter weather is here. The dirt and germs tracked in. And where does it end up? The carpet, of course. AquaCare has been at our house a couple of times. We love the way the carpets look and feel after. Call AquaCare today. Toll free 1-877-504-2104. That's 1-877-504-2104. They use a citrus-based all-natural cleaner, and your house smells great when they leave. You'll love the way the carpets look. 1-877-504-2104. AquaCare.
Hey, Carl Wolfson from The Morning Show. January is National Eye Care Month, a time when many of us use our new health insurance plans to get our eyes checked. Sadly, millions millions of people around the world don't have this luxury. This month, stop by Eyes on Broadway and donate your old glasses, which will be redistributed when Dr. Tom Barreto travels to Peru this March to perform eye exams for those less fortunate. A great way to start out the new year. Donate your old glasses at 2300 Northeast Broadway or learn more at eyesonbroadway.com.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Children for a presidential ribbon. They don't understand. I think it's time for change. Time to rearrange. The whole world's got strange. Yeah, I think it's time. It's time for change.
At 12 hours, or 12 days, 12 hours. No, 12 days. Geez, what would it be? 22 hours. My clock, I know this clock isn't right because it says 13 days, 10 hours. And maybe Ellen Ratner knows. Ellen, how many minutes until Barack Obama is sworn in?
Well, you know, it's on his website and I don't have it opened up.
Okay.
They keep it going.
Well, Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. What's up, Ellen?
Well, first of all, the economic data, you know, I often give you these broadcasts with some economic data, but I know you've had guests on from the National Association of Realtors. U.S. home sales fell to the lowest ever record recorder. A reading of 100 on this index indicates normal sales activity. It went to 82.3. Economists had expected a reading of 88. Factory orders fell. The Commerce Department today said that factory orders fell again in November, the fourth straight month. Orders declined by 4.6%. Now, that's 1 month, Tom.
Wow. Yeah, this is why I say we are now in the Second Republican Great Depression. And, you know, hopefully Barack Obama will take action very quickly and very boldly that will help bring us out of this. And it's not just us who are concerned about it. The whole world is freaking out. And
well, also, the bailout, by the way, it's not like writing a check. The Treasury Department today said that the government's going to spend, in January alone, $6.5 million on salaries and administrative costs in managing the $700 billion financial rescue program. Now, I don't know about you, but it seems to me that we have enough government employees. We probably could have some of them write out some of these checks.
Yeah, you're talking about the TARP program, or are you talking about what Obama wants?
The TARP program.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Well, the TARP program is a disaster from top to bottom. I mean, it's
frankly, it wasn't just the Bush administration. Congress didn't do their oversight job.
Oh, yeah. No, there's plenty of blame to go around on this thing. It was, you know, but let's start at the top. You had George Bush tell a national television address, tell the nation that we were at risk of sliding into a depression. And you had Henry Paulson saying we were at risk for a financial disaster if we didn't do this. Now, when the President of the United States comes out and says something, you know, frankly, that candidly, that you know, negative to his own hopes and his own party, even during, especially during a presidential election, I think every politician said, you know, we really need to take this seriously. The problem is that, you know, people have been seeing this coming for 3 years now. There's been politicians who've been yelling about it for 2 years. And, you know, the Republicans, especially the Bush administration, they were just hoping that they could keep their fingers in the dike and wait until this thing really broke after November 4th so John McCain could get elected, or after, ideally, if Obama gets elected, after the election or after he takes office on January 20th so that they could claim it was a Democratic crash. Didn't work out that way, but that was their hope.
Well, guess what?
Yeah.
A couple other interesting things. Roland Burris showed up at the U.S. Senate today. He got basically directions back to the front door, and he met with the Secretary of the Senate for 20 minutes. He held a brief press conference, and the Secretary said that his credentials are not in order and won't be accepted. And so now they go back to the drawing boards on that.
What do you know about the Secretary of State in Illinois not fulfilling his constitutional duty by certifying?
Maybe her. But I think that she will be ordered to by the court.
Yeah.
So I mean, Burris you're innocent until proven guilty. As Burris said, governor signing orders, are they illegal?
No, I don't think so. And yeah, exactly. I mean, the governor is signing legislation, and everybody in Congress, in the House and Senate in Illinois, is going, oh, great, he signed that law that we passed. Thank you very much, governor. And but by the way, don't make an appointment. I mean, come on, give me a break. You can't have it both ways. And it just it seems like just a huge mistake when Harry Reid and all the Democrats in the Senate decided to get on their high horse about what's going on in Illinois. It should be an issue that is kept within the state of Illinois.
We all agree on that front. A couple other interesting things. Condoleezza Rice. The president, by the way, is having lunch with Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and his wife. And then Condoleezza Rice is making her way up to New York today. She's going to have some bilateral meetings. And then at 5 p.m., there's a U.N. Security Council meeting. She's going to attend with and represent the United States at it. And this is obviously has to do with the situation in Gaza.
Now, the U.S. blew up an effort by, was it the Security Council or the entire U.N.? I think it was just the Security Council that we vetoed this effort to call on both parties for an immediate ceasefire. Yeah. So,
well,
any change in that?
Dana was asked today about the State Department calling for a durable ceasefire, and she said that her exact words were that the word immediately actually signals anything different than what we said yesterday. We want to get to a durable and lasting ceasefire as soon as possible. And if that is immediate, we would certainly welcome that. Now, you can translate that.
That's encouraging sounding rhetoric. You would think, though, that, you know, Condi Rice would have been on a plane to the Middle East a week ago.
And she's also saying, Dana said also, we've counseled our ally, or ally, as Condoleezza Rice calls it, to be very cautious about protecting innocents. And I do think the Israelis take good care to do so. And then they said that what we do know is that Hamas often hides among innocents. So that is how they're justifying some of that.
Yeah, no, I understand. And it's a very tough situation, but... Well, anyway, we've been debating that on this show for a couple of days. No need to revisit it at length here with you when you've got other news to tell us about.
One last thing. Minority Leader Boehner is going after House Democrats on the rule changes about a repeal the term limits for committee chairs that the Republicans put in. I actually think Boehner's right about this one.
Oh, that's interesting. Interesting. Thank you. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Great talking with you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Coming up next, Bill McKibben. Why is 350 the most important number in the world?
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, the American Geophysical Union had their annual meeting in San Francisco. Some truly scary statistics were presented and scenarios there, which we have discussed on this program. Jim Hansen, in the last piece he wrote, which I think was about a year and a half ago, although he had a piece for the AGU meeting, talked about literally keeping planet Earth habitable for humans and all other sophisticated life forms. I mean, you know, we could odds are we'll never nuke all life on Earth. There are microbes that live in the rocks below the ocean surface. that might end up reseeding the Earth if we really blow this thing up. But things are really serious. Bill McKibben is with us, the American environmentalist, the author of numerous books, including his latest, Deep Economy, The Wealth of Communities and the Durable Future, scholar in residence at Middlebury College in my old state, Vermont, and co-founder of 350.org. Bill, welcome to the show.
Tom, good to be with you. A beautiful day in your old stomping grounds here in Vermont.
I miss it. I love Portland, too, but I love Vermont. Yep. Hey, we're past the carbon tipping point. Time to freak out. And yet, on the right-wing websites, Drudge, for example, the last couple days running a big headline about, there's more Arctic ice than there was 26 years ago, where everything's fine. It's nothing to worry about.
You'll remember that Mr. Drudge was convinced that John McCain was going to win an overwhelming victory, too.
Yeah.
Look, the science on this is settled. I wrote the first book about global warming 20 years ago. At the time, it was a hypothesis, this idea that we were pouring enough CO2 into the atmosphere to warm things in a real way. But that hypothesis, unfortunately, has not only turned out to be true, it's happening faster and on a larger scale than we would ever have guessed 20 years ago. And the most compelling proof of that was the very rapid melt of Arctic sea ice the last two summers. Viewed from outer space, the Earth looks entirely different than it did. I mean, those pictures from Apollo 8 or whatever they were, the first pictures of the Earth against the black backdrop of space, those pictures are as out of date as my high school yearbook photo. In fact, in the same ways, there's less up top than there used to be. The Arctic is an entirely different place and changing enormously fast. This year, for the first time in human history, and long before human history, there was a successful ice-free navigation of the Northwest Passage.
Yeah.
Scientists are now saying is that it's just we're on the edge, not of global warming, but of a kind of out of control, runaway global warming that we won't be able to arrest. We're beginning to kick off a series of potent feedback loops, methane from beneath the tundra and beneath the ocean, things like that will just accelerate this beyond anyone's ability to deal with it.
Well, and in fact, the measurements, this was one of the things that came out of the AGU meetings, the methane measurements in the seawater around the tundra in Siberia are truly scary right now.
Yeah, not good.
The permafrost is melting. Here's the thing that concerns me, Bill. I see all these right-wing websites, and they go off about how there's all this sea ice accumulating right now, and we're going to have a very cold winter. It might end up being one of the coldest winters in a long, long time, and they're all going to claim that this is proof that global warming is a hoax, as many of them like to call it. My concern is that all this fresh water coming down off Greenland and coming out of the Arctic might be diluting the salinity of the water 200 kilometers south of Greenland, where the Great Conveyor Belt drops into the drops down to the floor of the Atlantic. And if it shuts down that Great Conveyor Belt, that flow of warm Pacific water that comes around south around the coast of Africa, comes up along the coast of South America, we call it the Gulf Stream as it passes the Gulf of Mexico and Florida and the east coast of the United States, then goes out into the Atlantic and settles. That Gulf Stream, that Great Conveyor Belt, puts into the atmosphere the heat that keeps Europe from being covered with ice. I mean, most of Europe, certainly Western and Northern Europe, is at a latitude that is not that different from Central Canada, that's covered with snow most of the year, and it could render 800 million people incapable of growing food. Is it conceivable? Is my most paranoid fear conceivable that one of the reasons we're seeing these severe cold events, that we had a foot and a half of snow here in Portland last week and it was snowing yesterday again, is because the Great Conveyor Belt is sputtering?
People worried more about that a few years ago than they do now. It's certainly conceivable that will happen, but there's no great sign that it has happened. And in fact, viewed as a whole, it's not a particularly cold winter. The Earth is on course to be considerably warmer than it was last year, and last year was the ninth warmest year on record. I mean, all 10 of the warmest years on record now have occurred since President Clinton took office. You know, we're in a period of enormous warmth.
Then why the extra sea ice in the Arctic right now that all these sites are talking about?
No,
are they just making it up?
There isn't any extra ice in the Arctic. I mean, anybody can check out the weekly extent of ice on the National Sea Ice Data Center website. And in fact, there's been quite a bit of melt even over the winter in the Arctic this year. The Antarctic has about 1% more ice than the kind of historical norm. We think that that's probably because of a kind of lingering effect of our last environmental folly, the hole in the ozone layer, which produces a kind of vortex that produces, keeps winds circling the interior of the Antarctic that keep it cooler. But if you go to places like the Antarctic Peninsula, the temperature has risen there faster perhaps than any place on Earth, and we're seeing huge melt there as well. So, you know, outside of the kind of fever dreams of right-wing websites, you know, the science isn't in dispute. What's in dispute is whether we're actually going to do anything about it or not, and if so, what that should look like.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get back to 350. Mm-hmm. This 350.org is an absolutely brilliant website. You've got a couple of graphics here that people can see up at the top that, you know, within 5, 10, 15 seconds immediately educate people as to the situation. 350 being the critical number of the parts per billion of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
And it's a tough number, unfortunately.
Or is it parts per million?
Parts per million. You know, before the Industrial Revolution, there were 275 parts per million CO2 in the atmosphere. That's sort of Earth normal, at least as far as humans are concerned. We began burning coal and gas and oil and putting more CO2 in the atmosphere, but nobody ever really knew where the red line was. And we, until a few years ago, thought that we still had a little wiggle room left, you know, that we were getting close, but that there was still... Well, when the Arctic melted in the summer of 2007, our best scientists went back to work, and Hansen's team at NASA... he's a federal government scientist working for the moment for George Bush, produced this very powerful paper saying both the historical climate data and current observation makes it clear that we're already past the danger point, that the safe upper bound is 350 parts per million CO2. We're at 387 now. So we launched this campaign, 350.org, which is really the first global grassroots climate change campaign, in an effort to make people understand that what had been a big problem has become a freaking emergency. You know, capital F, capital E. And that we've got to get to work on it right away.
Right.
Our actions are focused mostly on the upcoming 11 months from now summit in Copenhagen, where the world is supposed to come up with a successor to the Kyoto Treaty, and we desperately need it to be much tougher than the negotiations are aiming at the moment.
We have a half a minute left. Bill McKibben, BillMcKibben.com, 350.org, the website. Bill, what can the average American do? What can people do right now?
Look, you know all the things you can do in your house.
Sure.
You know, change the light bulb. But we're not going to solve this one light bulb at a time.
No.
The only real way to solve it is to get politically involved. That's why we've got 350.org, and it has just the framework that one needs to take action on a global scale.
Okay. So get in contact with your legislators. Tell them that this is urgent to you, to all of us, that this is not some abstraction. This is not just science wonk. We need action right
now. Amen.
And visit 350.org. Sign up for the alerts. Pass it along to your friends. Start a 350 action group. 350.org, the website. Bill McKibben, one of the founders. BillMcKibben.com for his great work and your new book, Deep Economy, The Wealth of Communities and the Durable Future. Bill, thanks so much for dropping by.
Tom, thank you so much. Take care, brother.
Keep up the good work, my friend. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Wasn't Jesus a community organizer? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Is your IRA performing the way you want it to? Are you concerned about the stock market and inflation? Many people have been watching their IRA stock portfolio dwindle in value. It's tough to plan for retirement in today's economy. The answer may be gold. Experts believe that gold and other precious metals are wise investments for your IRA because historically they have been one of the few ways to protect assets from high inflation and economic uncertainty. You can now put gold in your IRA. The very forces that weaken paper-backed stock investments often cause gold to rise. It's now easier than ever to do and is approved by the federal government. Together, we can help you develop an IRA portfolio that works for you. Call Blanchard & Company Incorporated for a free, no-obligation consultation to learn how. Call 888-IRA-GOLD. 888-IRA-GOLD. That's 888-IRA-GOLD. 888-IRA-GOLD.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth?
It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evening, 8 to 11. AM 620 KBOJ. 620KBOJ.com.
I'm Tom Dwyer. I usually give you our number, 230-2300, and now I'm giving you another important number, 350. Why 350? We know too much carbon dioxide contributes to global climate change, and now we know how much is too much. The best science tells us that 350 parts per million carbon dioxide is the red line for humans on Earth. The higher over 350 we go, the less likely it is that we'll ever bring climate change under control. Right now, we're at 387. You can do something. Go to TomDwyer.com. And click the link to 350.org and learn about the global movement to bring us back down below 350. Then join our carbon neutral program and offset your carbon emissions now. Sign up using the promo code KPOJ, save 50% on membership, your car will be carbon neutral, and we'll give you $350 worth of discounts. Now that's a great way to help your car, your wallet, and your planet. Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, keeping your vehicle safe, breakdown free, and operating at their best. 503-230-2300. And now, more importantly, 350.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state.
Most of us don't like medical exams. So if you're a healthy person who's put off getting term life insurance, now hear this. Because you can get up to $500,000 in term life insurance with no doctor visit and no medical exam within minutes just by answering a few health questions over the phone. For a free quote, call eFinancial at 1-800-619-9011. Many people put off getting life insurance because they don't like medical exams, but it's possible to answer a few simple health questions and receive term life from top-rated carriers in minutes and for less than you'd imagine. Everyone's situation is different, but you could qualify for $500,000 of term life with no medical exam, and it's affordable. You could even be covered today. If you're living without term life, do what's right for your family in minutes, right over the phone. Call now for your free quote. Call 1-800-619-9011. 1-800-619-9011.
What are you doing in the next 15 minutes? You could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance. All it takes is a quick visit to GEICO.com or a quick call. 1-800-947-AUTO.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Now back to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Have you ever stared into a starry sky? Lying on your back, you're asking why. What's the purpose? I wonder, am I? If you've ever stared into a starry sky.
Ooh. 21 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I don't know. Maybe we're crazy. Maybe. You know, actually, this is almost a not so crazy alert. Ashland, Oregon, town down the road from us. has an art gallery there. City Councilor Eric Navickas, who owned the Mata Shell Gallery with partner Amy Goddard. What they will do is you go in and you pay a buck, and there's this 8 foot tall photo, or I don't know, maybe it's a cutout of George W. Bush. And they will take a pair of shoes and cover the bottom of the shoes with red paint. I'm assuming these are like, you know, shoes from Salvation Army or something, or old, worn out, dead, whatever. And you get to throw those shoes at George Bush's picture. And if it hits, there's a red mark there. Hey, cool. 91-year-old Marjorie Mather, one of the very first to throw a shoe at George Bush. Good on you, Marjorie. She said, wow, I didn't know that was going to be so much fun, as she smacked the shoe into George Bush's image. Goddard, by the way, the gallery director, said that this exhibit is a, quote, statement of solidarity with Muntadir El-Zaidi, the Iraqi journalist who was arrested and beaten and apparently tortured after hurling two shoes at George W. Bush in protest during a Baghdad news conference last month. So, good on you. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Robin in Washington. Hey, Robin, what's up?
Tom, thank you for everything you do, and you should be number one on that list. I was listening to Mark Thompson yesterday, and I think he mentioned the New York Times' source. I'm not entirely sure about that. But he said that Harry Reid was actually campaigning inside the Senate for Obama's seat to not be filled by a black man.
No, not the case. Harry Reid was actually, I don't know. I mean, the rumors are that Reid had a choice. I do an hour live in Chicago on Fridays typically, and take a lot of calls from Chicagoans. And what I was hearing was, you know, a broad consensus that Jan Schakowsky should get the seat. That was just, you know, among progressives who listen to Chicago's progressive talk. I thought Jan Schakowsky was the best pick. There are other people who have been named, but I don't believe it's even in Harry Reid to make a choice based on racial lines. The guy's not a racist.
I should hope not. I mean, he's ineffectual as is, but I mean,
I have plenty of complaints about Harry Reid. His being a racist. Yeah, I have plenty of complaints about Harry Reid. His being a racist is not one of them. So, I wouldn't.
Well, I hope not.
No. I think I can safely guarantee that. That's
okay,
that's not...
boss. Keep up the good work. When I catch another fish, you guys will get some down there.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Robin. Okay. Yeah, that smoked salmon is great. Appreciate it. Steve in Portland. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind today?
I want to say that Jimmy Carter was prevented from speaking at the Denver convention by the Obama campaign because of his book calling the Israeli occupation what it is. The new U.S. Senator from Oregon, Merkley, returned a substantial donation to a donor here in Portland, a woman who's a Palestinian activist, and that's the only reason he returned it. Rahm Emanuel, what do you think his position is going to be on the current conflict? So I say the Bush administration may want a permanent ceasefire, but they want it under Israel's terms, and the Democratic Party wants the same thing.
Yeah. There is a lot of heat on both sides, Steve, and I think that we, as we've done and said on this program, I think that we need to be looking for the common ground, and we need to immediately stop the violence on both sides, just immediately. And the latest report now, a couple of UN schools have been hit. Some of the Israeli soldiers have died in friendly fire. I mean, this situation is just a full-blown, all-around tragedy, as war always is. And al-Qaeda is dancing in the streets. You know, Hamas may not be, but al-Qaeda is. This is just another recruiting poster for al-Qaeda. And in large part, I lay a lot of the responsibility for this, the blame for this whole situation, and the whole situation, I mean the entire situation. Hamas throwing rockets into Israel from Gaza, Israel, in my opinion, overreacting to that, lay it at the foot of George W. Bush, because there was such an opportunity in 2006 after we were the people. He was the president. This was his administration that was pushing for those elections to be held in Gaza, And then when they were held, I mean, it did not do the things, the Greg Mortons and three cups of tea. Can't we learn a lesson from this stuff? I mean, go back and watch the movie Charlie Wilson's War. Yeah, it's there's a certain amount of fantasy to the world, to the movie. But it is based in reality, and the reality is that we supported the Mujahideen in Afghanistan when they drove the Soviets out, and we were supporting what was the proto-Taliban, the early Taliban. And after that war, Charlie Wilson went to Congress and said, hey, you spent, you know, $500 million driving the Soviets out. Give me $5 million to build some schools. Give me $10 million to build some hospitals. This is chump change. This is nothing. This is the amount of money that Congress spends in 35 seconds. Give me that money, and we'll build an infrastructure in Afghanistan, and we'll have a country that will be on our side. And Congress said, nah, don't want to do it. Same thing with Gaza. This is our problem, too. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Fighting mind-numbing incompetence. Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
This is interesting. Apple cutting the price of selected songs on iTunes to 69 cents from a buck. Well, 99 cents. And for the first time, songs are free of copy protection. That is... that's news. That's, copy protection on songs is... You know, I am not a song pirate, and I don't think most people are. But I have more than one thing that I can play music on. And, you know, I've got a couple of computers, and I've got an iPod, and it's like, you know, come on. It's how hysterical about this stuff do we need to be? Not very, in my humble opinion. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Bill in Miami, listening on WINS. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Tom?
Yes, sir, you're on the air.
Thank you. I'm calling with a great admiration for you and your program, but at the same time, great dismay with the Bush administration. I happen to be an early responder from the World Trade Center on 9/11, but my call today is really regarding accountability.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, here we have a point where the Bush and Cheney team are going about, it's mixed metaphors, they're out polishing the pig, and it's just not right for people who have done so much, so much damage, so much death and destruction.
What I don't get, Bill, is how these guys, you know, like Dick Cheney, and they go on TV and they say, you know, we kept you safe for 7 years, and nobody says, then why didn't you keep us safe on 9/11? You were told back in August this was coming. You were told in April this was coming. Bill Clinton told George W. Bush. Al Gore told Dick Cheney. Richard Clark was telling anybody who would listen that Al Qaeda was coming to the United States, and we did absolutely friggin' nothing up until 9/11. And it's almost like, gee, they wanted it to happen. They needed a Pearl Harbor event. I mean, why were they so docile about this? Nobody in the corporate media has asked that question of any administration official, and instead they're letting them say, oh, we kept you safe. Well, I'm sorry, I recall 3,000 people dying.
Yep. And there are so many issues. There's so many issues, and so far the petitions and the Nobel impeachment attempts have been ignored.
Yes.
It's unfortunate that takes, you know, recently we saw somebody throw a shoe in Iraq, and it took a shoe throwing, something as bizarre as that, to get the attention of the American people to realize that we've effectively destroyed a country. Other people go about saying, oh, we've done wonders for them, but we've done so much damage. We've destroyed so many families. There's so many problems that still exist. You know how, as I'm saying with the, whether it be a mission accomplished banner or shooting someone in the face or the shoe, that sometimes takes something rather bizarre to get the attention of the media, and then for the media to be able to, for Congress to be able to get the attention to actually take action. And there is an initiative right now that's going to take place immediately after the inauguration as Bush gets into his helicopter to go on to private life, and that is for the populace, both in Washington and around the world, to effectively raise their middle finger in a gesture of dissatisfaction. It's a peaceful gesture of dissatisfaction en masse that can be recorded by the media and kept for posterity. And we hope that that will become part of his legacy, and we'll hope that will embolden Congress and the justice system to say, yeah, people are really unhappy with the situation. And if we want future leaders to understand the standard, and if we want other countries around the world to look to the United States as an example, we can't let criminals, effectively criminals, leave.
Is this the website Finger Salute? Is this the website fingersalutetobush.org?
Yes, fingersalutetobush.org. .org as an organized for accountability.
Right. And well, good on you. What day is Bush going to get in the helicopter? Is that the day before, the day after? You know, I frankly don't remember.
Well, that's immediately following the inauguration. Okay. This has nothing to do with the incoming new president.
Don't you run a risk that if everybody runs out on the street after the inauguration and puts out their middle finger, that a lot of conservatives are going to say, oh, look, they don't like Obama?
Well, they can do it to their TV screen, take a photograph, send it to the media. They can do it en masse. There'll be over 25,000 cards with instructions sent out at the mall alone during the inauguration. This will take place after the inauguration ceremony. There's a parade. After the parade, they go back to the White House. From the White House, the new president stays at the White House. The old president boards the helicopter. The helicopter takes off, and it's within clear view of everybody in the D.C. area.
Right.
In addition to that, it'll be covered by television.
Well, I'll be there. It'll be really interesting to see what happens. Bill, I've got to move along, but fingersalutetobush.org. It's a fascinating website. And Bush has famously given us the finger on several occasions. I mean, literally. So there you go. Raymond in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Raymond.
Hi, Tom. I do appreciate your program. I am calling regarding the middle-class bailout.
Mm-hmm.
We know average people in the United States family owns about $8,000 in credit card.
Right.
If the middle class people get united and stop paying all this credit card, that will be a biggest bailout for middle class.
It would be, but it's not going to happen, Raymond. The American people are not they're not that united. It's, you know,
well,
it's,
the problem is in the free society that like United States.
Here's the other problem with that, Raymond, and this is the problem with most bailout schemes, and that is that let's say that we were able to convince politicians in Washington, D.C. to pay off all our credit cards or to declare a jubilee, you know, a holiday on debt and declare all debt done as the ancient Israelis did every 7 years and every 49 years, every 50 years, and just, you know, have... You know, okay, you don't owe that $7,000 anymore. It's a short-term stimulus. What we need is a long-term stimulus, and the only thing, and this is the thing that needs to be repeated over and over and over again to our politicians and to the people in America, and you're not going to hear this from the corporate media because, you know, this is not the message that millionaires and billionaires want out, and the billionaires own the corporate media, and the millionaires are the ones who are on TV. But this is the bottom line. The only way you can stimulate an economy like ours is by increasing the wages of working people. And you're not going to do it with tax cuts. You're not going to do it with...
Tom, I do agree with you about that one. But still, if you don't pay that this credit card, it will be a big message to the politician and for the big Wall Street.
Yeah, and it would be a big message. No, I got it, Raymond. And it would be a big message to the credit card companies too, who have engaged in absolutely usurious activity. I mean, it's outrageous. 30% interest rates. I mean, that used to be a crime. It used to be a federal crime, and it should be again. Jerry in New Mexico, listening to KTRC. Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, hi. I just want to make a comment about Harry Reid. Everybody's sort of ragging on him, and I just want to make the point that the leader of the Senate has no constitutional power, and it's not a very desirable post. It's my understanding that most senators do not want to be the leader of the Senate because they get all the blame for everything and none of the credit.
Yeah,
and
it's a lot of
really the work. Only person to make anything out of it was Lyndon Johnson, but Lyndon Johnson, and I'm sure you've read Robert Caro's biography of him, could make a power base out of an egg salad sandwich.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody else has been able to make anything out of it.
Let's see. Tip O'Neill was Speaker of the House, wasn't he? There's been a couple of Speakers of the House who've done quite well.
The Speaker has real power, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And Bill Frist was the Senate leader during the let's blow up the nuclear option period. Frist, as I recall, seemed to do a pretty good job with that, you know, from their point of view, with that position. But, yeah, you know, and I realize I rag on Harry Reid probably way too much. I've met Harry Reid. I have a lot of respect for Harry Reid as a legislator. He's a good representative for the state of Nevada. He's a good man. Somebody needs to teach him political theater. He doesn't seem to understand.
I would agree with your ragging on him. I'm just saying that there's a reason there are so many mediocrities being chosen for this. Nobody wants to be leader. No senator in their right mind with seniority wants the post.
Yeah.
Also, another point I wanted to make about Ronald Reagan's opinion of George W. Bush. Apparently, Reagan did not like his father, but apparently he met his son and he couldn't stand W. And I didn't know that. Had you heard that?
I'm not a big reader of Reagan biographies, so it, you know, it may be out there for all to see. Jerry, thank you for that. That's interesting. Next time I see Ron Reagan, I'll ask him. He I'm sure would know. Harvey in Berkeley, California. Hey, Harvey, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom, and Happy New Year to you and your audience.
Thank you.
And with the polar caps melting and the Greenland ice shelf melting at an unprecedented rate, I'm calling for floodgates to be put in front of the Golden Gate Bridge. To stop the water coming in, because the Sacramento Growing Valley is a $30 billion agricultural industry producing more than half of the nation's fruits, vegetables, and nuts. And if the ocean rises and backs up into the Bay Area, it'll back up and create an inland sea into the Sacramento Growing Valley, as well as parts of the...
How much sea level rise will it take to flood? At what level above sea level is the Sacramento Valley?
I'm not quite sure, but it's a pretty low level. In fact, there's always problems now with deltas and things like that. They're still getting flooded. So I feel that it's time to start that project.
Yeah, time to learn some lessons from Holland.
Yes, there's all kinds of engineering available.
Yeah, half their country is underwater. I mean, or under sea level. It's not underwater any longer. Interesting point, and they've been doing it for 500 years or longer. You know, pump the seawater out. Build the dikes. It's come to that, hasn't it? It's come to that. See, the problem isn't just going to be the rising sea levels. The problem is going to be that species are dying that are essential to the web of life. This is much bigger than just water.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Saving the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
Is your IRA performing the way you want it to? Are you concerned about the stock market and inflation? Many people have been watching their IRA stock portfolio dwindle in value. It's tough to plan for retirement in today's economy. The answer may be gold. Experts believe that gold and other precious metals are wise investments for your IRA because historically they have been one of the few ways to protect assets from high inflation and economic uncertainty. You can now put gold in your IRA. The very forces that weaken paperback stock investments often cause gold to rise. It's now easier than ever to do and is approved by the federal government. Together, we can help you develop an IRA portfolio that works for you. Call Blanchard & Company Incorporated for a free, no-obligation consultation to learn how. Call 888-IRA-GOLD. 888-IRA-GOLD. That's 888-IRA-GOLD. 888-IRA-GOLD.
Are you waking up with Carl Wolfson and friends?
These are less popular suggestions. Abraham Lincoln.
6 to 9.
The Obama's first dog, what name it could be.
Promise, because he promised the girls and he promised us.
Elephant eater. How about lipstick?
How about rogue?
You've got to have southpaw. I'd like to give it a local name and name it Mutt Safino, the weather dog.
It's Carl Wilson.
As Abraham Lincoln said.
Morning 6 to 9.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Portland's only progressive talk station.
Look at this mess. I cannot believe the kids left all these empty soft drink cans. Looks like I'm stuck cleaning it up.
Well, hi there. I'm your local Geico representative.
Why are you in my recycling bin?
Oh, I was just reading last week's paper. Anyway, because I'm located right here in town, I'm always close by. So if you ever need help saving money on car insurance, I'm never far away.
Wow, you are close by.
You bet. Oh, this is for you.
What's this?
It's a coupon for frozen lasagna. See? I'm already saving you money. Oh, and at Tuesday's double coupons.
Wow.
If you ever need help saving money on car insurance, have questions about your policy, or just want a free rate quote, your local GEICO representative is always close by.
Your local GEICO office can help you insure more than just your car. They can help you with motorcycle, boat, homeowners, renters, and other insurance products. For a free quote, call 503-794-0901. That's 503-794-0901. Or visit your local GEICO office at 13031 Southeast 84th Avenue in Clackamas.
Hey, Carl Wolfson here. One of the many perks for our listeners is getting exclusive deals from our loyal advertisers, and here's one you can't afford to pass up. During January, Floor Trends Northwest is offering free basic installation on any carpet purchase over 50 yards. That's a savings of more than $600. They're also offering up to 50% off all overstock carpet and hardwood. Now is the time to take advantage of these huge discounts, only for KPOJ listeners and only at Floor Trends Northwest in Selwood.
Honey, put this on top of the minivan.
We're only going for 2 weeks. You want me to back the kitchen sink, too?
Well, is there room?
Hey, you guys. You going on vacation?
Who's that?
I don't know.
Because we're planning on robbing your house tonight.
All right, I'm calling an alarm service.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. There's a simple blood test called A1C that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. Why is it important? Because more than 600 people every day die from diabetes and its complications. If your A1C is above 7, your doctor can show you how to lower it. If you have diabetes, know your risk. Know your A1C. Ask your doctor, or for more information, go to www.diabetesa1c.org or call 1-877-TEST-A1C. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
Now back to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Viagra for your brain. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room. Some great folks in there. It's quite full today. Fascinating conversations. And John in Akron, he says, thanks. That was sweet. Hey, thank you, John, for talking about a couple of our topics today. Harold in Buckeye, Arizona. Hey, Harold, what's on your mind today?
I think that the Republicans put the payoff in, and that's what started this whole thing about Blago.
How so?
They put the payoff into Fitzpatrick to get this Blago thing going.
Harry
Reid fell for it like a big turkey.
Yeah, it could be. Let me tell you my take on Patrick Fitzgerald. And it's very fashionable among liberal circles or democratic circles to deify Patrick Fitzgerald. In fact, I've seen posts on a couple of progressive message boards where people say, let's put Patrick Fitzgerald in charge of prosecuting the Bush team. I say, look at the record. Patrick Fitzgerald was charged with the responsibility of prosecuting the person who outed Valerie Plame. The evidence indicates that that person was Dick Cheney. Is Dick Cheney in jail? No. So, A, Patrick Fitzgerald, in my opinion, screwed up that investigation and then stopped it once it started getting to the place where it would be bad for it. Keep in mind, Fitzgerald is a Republican. And number two, people say, well, look at, he did a great job in Chicago. Look at, he went after Blagojevich. Except that now Fitzgerald has said, you know, we want to wait 90 days before we go any farther on this. Well, why would you want to wait 90 days? Well, if you're a Republican, you want to wait 90 days because that means that Illinois won't have a senator for 90 days. And you know, I am sorry, you know, there, maybe it's the conspiracy nut in me, although, you know, and I, maybe, who knows? But I don't think that Patrick Fitzgerald is the saint everybody makes him out to be. I think he's a good and decent prosecutor. and a Republican. And in that context, I don't trust his motives. I'm sorry. Whether it was just, you know, some, I don't think that he's doing things, you know, in just as part of some huge Republican conspiracy. But I do think that he's not the knight on white, you know, white armor, or white, the white horse, knight in shiny armor, all that kind of stuff. He should be allowed to resign his position, and he should be replaced by a prosecutor of equal competence who has some semblance of loyalty, who is not a member of the Federalist Society, and who has some semblance of loyalty to the current administration, frankly. I'll just leave it at that. Armin in Bradenton. Hey, Armin, what's up?
As you say so energetically from time to time, you're spot on your economics. And here's the thing that the right wing and the corporate media doesn't portray to a high enough degree and level for people to comprehend sophistication and significance of economics. And it's exactly what you're saying, I said 15 years ago, and that is credit was becoming too much a part of people's lost wages. And the whole thing is, stop and think about this collectively as a whole. America, you have all these people out there, and the thing that counts is disposable income after taxes.
Right.
And when you look at disposable income after taxes, that drives demand, just like you said. And what they've done, I think, that if you want to give it to the purest of the Republicans that have this corporate libertarian ideology, which will never work, it'll never work, because here we are with 20% of the people owning 95% of the wealth. In better times, the 50s, it was 40% that owned 90% of the wealth. So we went way the wrong way, and we have these billionaires owning the media, and the millionaires on the media, and you don't expect them to destroy themselves casually. That's not human nature.
Yeah.
But the point is, credit has taken too much precedent over wages.
No, you're absolutely right. And this is the Greenspan's fraud part of Ravi Batra. And thank you for pointing it out. Is the Greenspan's fraud part of Ravi Batra's brilliant book, Greenspan's Fraud. And if you don't have a copy of Ravi's book, Greenspan's Fraud, you really should buy it and read it, because it's a wonderful primer in economics to begin with. And secondly, it lays out exactly what Greenspan did. And when Reagan, in 1981, declared war on organized labor and on working people, a process that led directly to the collapse of wages, of good-paying jobs, which has continued unabated for 28 years. When Reagan did that and people stopped having the money in their paychecks, Greenspan looked at this, Reagan looked at this, all the economists in the Reagan administration looked at this, David Stockman, the whole bunch of them. Stockman wasn't an economist, but he pretended he was, and said, how are we going to make up for all these lost wages? Because we're taking wages away from people, and we're giving that money to big corporations, and we're giving it to rich people, which is fine, that's our goal, but, you know, somebody's got to buy the stuff. And Greenspan looked around and he said, you know, this middle class out here, there's a lot of people who have got a lot of equity in their homes. The average American in 1980 owns, what, 30-40% of his home? Let's take that down to 5% equity. Let's have them spend the equity that they have in their homes. The average American in 1980 bought their car. They owned their car. They bought them on 3-, 4-, and 5-year mortgages, basically, on loans. He said, let's do away with that. Let's take away the ownership of their car. Let's just rent them their cars. Let's throw them into credit cards. In 1980, it was very hard to get a credit card. And if you got one, it was hard to get a high credit limit. And if you maintained a high credit limit for more than a couple of months, they would come down on you. And he said, let's loosen this up. Let's loan people money. And Greenspan drove this charge for free and loose credit. And it, you know, it maintained spending for 20 years. And it's wiped out the middle class. Exactly what the Republicans wanted, to get rid of those pesky rebels, those people who would take to the streets in the 60s. Coming up tomorrow, Adam Michelson, former senior vice president at Countrywide Home Loans. Oh, that should be interesting. And Jim Rubin, going to talk to us about the epidemic of success. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.